Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
In a highly anticipated appearance, Chief Medical Officer Sir Chris Whitty will give evidence to the COVID-19 inquiry later. His appearance comes a day after that of former Chief Scientific Advisor and colleague Sir Patrick Vallance. Scottish First Minister Hamza Yousaf will lead a debate on a ceasefire in Gaza today. He tabled a motion yesterday which will be debated in Holyrood, calling for an immediate ceasefire in the conflict. Defence Secretary Grant Shapps has been speaking in the House of Commons on the arms Israel is being supplied with from the UK. He says he's tried his best to minimise the fighting by sending aid across the region.
So I sent a Royal Navy task group to try to de-escalate tensions, and those, along with other facilities, are doing everything we possibly can to help both lower the tensions and certainly act as deterrents, but also to ensure that we can get aid into the region.
And outsourcing giant Capita is the company that manages the licence fee for the BBC and runs recruitment for the army, has said it might slash up to 900 jobs in a bid to save costs. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Paul Blundell.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
Now that calls for a dance, Dermot.
Do I have to?
You can limbo. That's it.
Oh, thanks. Just call me Dermot Olimbo.
Very good.
Get that Euro Millions feeling tonight. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot, account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
London has made real progress in reducing new HIV diagnoses. And that's because we know what works. Be sure. Know the four ways to prevent HIV. 1. Test regularly and know your status. 2. Condoms can prevent HIV and other sexually transmitted infections. 3. PrEP is a pill which can prevent HIV. 4. Undetectable, or U equals U, means people living with HIV on treatment cannot pass it on. Be sure. Know the four. Together we can reach zero new HIV infections. Visit doitlondon.org.
Hi, I'm Austin Obi-Cherry, a bowel cancer screening specialist. Believe it or not, your next trip to the toilet could save your life. If you receive an NHS bowel cancer screening kit in the post, you should complete it as soon as possible. You do it privately at home by following a few simple steps. Just a tiny sample detects signs of cancer before you notice anything wrong. If you're sent a bowel cancer screening kit, put it by the loo. Don't put it off. For more information, visit nhs.uk/bowel screening.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Africa in Focus is sponsored by Dermadew Lotion. Visit damashark.co.uk.
Colorful
radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or even good evening, depending on the time zone that you are on. Welcome to Africa in Focus. We are coming to you from the heart of London on Colorful Radio to wherever you are in this wonderful world, where we stand on a very cold, frizzy winter time in the UK. But that's not to frighten you. I know there are other things to contend with, other places. We have floods. I fear floods. I like the seaside, but I don't like flooding. So whichever corner you find yourself, look on the positive side. And join us as we embark on another journey with our show today. Talk about topical issues that are happening across Africa and the rest of the world. And of course, to do this today, I'm joined by my great friend, Jonas Hawu. He's a broadcaster. He does his own shows and a very seasoned journalist and African enthusiast. Welcome to the show, Jonas.
Always a pleasure, Julius. Always a pleasure to be on the show.
It's great. It's always great to have you around. You know, sometimes it's like you go to enjoy a fireplace, and if the guy you are with there doesn't talk a lot, it begins to be cold, even though the fire is burning.
Yeah.
is always a pleasure, because even when it's cold, I feel it's kind of okay. We are great.
Yes. When it comes to the East of Africa, absolutely.
Yeah, so today our listeners, as you join us, our topic or issue, we are talking about a very important topic. And this topic is none other than Pan-Africanism. Pan-Africanism. You may look at it in so many different ways. You may have heard about it. You may have preconceived ideas about it as well. And you know what? I just want to hear someone tell us what Pan-Africanism could mean. Of course, all other thoughts are welcome, but let's start up by this.
Pan-Africanism, if I was to sum it up in three basic principles, number one, all African people are one family. Whether you're in South Africa speaking Zulu or Xhosa, whether you're in Nigeria speaking Yoruba or Igbo, whether you're in Kenya speaking Maasai or Kikuyu, whether you're in Senegal speaking Wolof or Mandingo, whether you're in South Bronx speaking Ebonics or in Haiti speaking French or Brazil speaking Portuguese, we one family. And it doesn't matter what your religion is, whether you're Muslim or Christian or traditional African spiritualist, whether you pledge allegiance to this flag or that flag, whether you're light skin or dark skin, straight hair, nappy hair like mine, one family.
Yeah.
And we should identify on the level of our Africanity first. Being African is more important than anything else. Why? Because God made you an African. Mm. Everything else you belong to, you chose. You can leave Christianity tomorrow. You can leave Islam tomorrow. You can renounce your South African citizenship tomorrow.
I don't know whether there's any more fitting definition. I don't know what your thoughts are. Yeah, I have my thoughts. You go first. I've been talking.
Well, it's interesting listening to Dr. Umar's definition of Pan-Africanism. And I think, in essence, he captures the meaning of Pan-Africanism. But I think when you delve a bit deeper, it's much broader in the sense that, you know, Pan-Africanism is not anything new. And if we really want to focus on where it's from and how it started and how it resonated with Africans in general, people of African descent, I think probably need to look at the diaspora first before looking at the African continent as a whole. And by all means, as one writer puts it, it will be silly of us to think it just means one thing. And one writer puts it as Pan-Africanism, actually, it depends on what the political climate is. So, for instance, the movement across the entire globe, what Africans were going through, whether it be in the diaspora or back on the continent of Africa, whatever was happening at that political moment where Africans are trying to overcome the oppressors, can be seen or described as Pan-Africanism. If we come across the continent of Africa dealing with colonization, trying to eliminate everything colonization presented, is Pan-Africanism. Freedom fighters is Pan-Africanism. The unity of Africa is Pan-Africanism. So in a broader sense, it meshes everything together. It's not just one thing, but it's a lot, the whole, it's a big scope of what it actually means. So, as Nkrumah once said, I was not born an African, but rather Africa was born within me. And that is the essence of Pan-Africanism, I would say.
Yeah, I quite agree, Jonas. And we see it's not the way it was phrased there. It's not about Africa alone. We're talking about, it's a movement, worldwide movement, yeah, basically. Which aims to encourage and strengthen bonds of solidarity between all indigenous people from Africa, wherever they are. And of course, I think the uniting point is their enslavement and colonization, which this kind of movement seeks to end or terminate. And it's very important to have that in mind, because this month of November, we've seen two topical incidences or issues. We've seen, of all the people, wonderful, great Julius Malema, he has gone to Kenya finally. And also, the king went to Kenya finally. So they were both in Kenya. But it is now, why did they go to Kenya, which is amazing and subject to our topic today, because it's still very topical and is still raising different issues. And I think what happened was when Julius Malema went to Kenya, he went to Lukenya University. They happened to have started this big institution that from today henceforth will be like a reference point for the Pan-Africanism across the continent. So it's not just like PLO Lumumba talking in Kenya, Malema speaking in South Africa alone. There's a unity of brothers who now want to cement this movement properly for the sake of the future. So Julius Malema finds himself in Lukenya University being the guest speaker on this launch of the institution for Pan-Africanism in Lukenya University. And let's hear what some of the things he had to say.
I don't know if President William Ruto means it, because he said so many things and I can't locate him these days, because the things he said during election and the things he's doing now are two different things. I don't know, because I heard him saying we need to do away with the dollar and build our own currency. But his actions are not speaking to anything of doing away with the dollar. The latest being putting a red carpet. A person who killed the Kenyan people coming into this country, receiving a red carpet and being saluted by our own army. This is not a Kenyan army. It's not a colonialist army. The Kenyan army is a product of the Mau Mau rebellion, and those who killed our people in the Mau Mau rebellion cannot be saluted by the same army of the children of those who were killed during Mau Mau rebellion. We have a duty to stay true to the cause. We call upon the Kenyan government to be firm and to decide what they want to be. Do they want to be Pan-Africanist, or do they want to be proponents of neocolonialism? You can't have it both. Only one call must be made, and that call is of Pan-Africanism. It's not easy being a Pan-Africanist, for because the mindset of our people is so colonized, they are going to isolate you. They are going to look at you as if you are a mad person. They are going to look at you as if you are unreasonable. But it is a cause worth pursuing because of the generation that came before us. We don't want visas. We want one currency for Africa. Because our currency can be more powerful than the pound and the dollar combined, because London has got the biggest storage of gold, yet they don't have a single smallest mine of gold. Their economy is based on our minerals. And if we safeguard our minerals and protect them and say out of these minerals, we are producing a currency that is going to compete internationally, we stand a good chance. We need African Central Bank. We need African Monetary Zone. We need African military combat. Because these pockets of wars that are happening in Africa are not of our own making. They are sponsored wars so that those who continue to steal our resources can do so uninterrupted, as we fight ourselves.
Of course, the king is on the record. He apologized for regretted about colonization. He made gestures. He met more veterans. He even went to meet Kenyan war veterans who fought during the Second World War and all that.
This is Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, DermaDew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, DermaDew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. DermaDew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
You used to listen to Malema just before Kenya's election, last election. He tended to be very much pro-Ruto, the current president, William Ruto. Mm-hmm. And he tended to have a go at the oppositionist, Raila Odinga. Now then, he can't find his friend anymore.
I mean, gosh, listening to that, there's a lot to unpack here. I mean, first and foremost, to talk about King Charles and his inability to apologize, as you know, you've just clarified there. I mean, first and foremost, the president is a diplomatic position to have and to hold, and there are certain things that cannot just be said outwardly, especially with the king. History does inform us and make us know about the ills of the British Empire. That's not to say it goes unnoticed. When Julius Malema was talking there, you know, I had to wrestle with the fact that, okay, how do you approach this as somebody in government? I mean, you are entitled to have your opinion. Now, you can choose to go the radical way, the extreme way, which appears to him, or the diplomatic ways, which, of course, you've mentioned there, to the fact that he went to visit the veterans and, you know, apologize and so on and so forth. Okay, so there are two things here. But I think what he said, which to me was more important, was the fact that to be a Pan-Africanist means that you will lose, or you become an enemy of a lot of people, that you lose a lot of people, which I think to me is very, very important. How do you become a Pan-Africanist and still be part of the global society? And as somebody said, you know, being a Pan-Africanist does not mean you are anti-Western. Doesn't make you anti-Western. But trying to address and find solutions to the problems without the interference of the Western imposition. And I think this is the dichotomy. This is where we find hard, you know, to look at the nuances and to try and separate the two. I listened to that clip and I even went a bit further to where he talks about, you know, neocolonialism still prevalent across the continent of Africa. And, you know, the whole indirect ruling, which Pan-Africanism is all against, by the way, still exists. And he made mention of something which I had to go back and just look at it. And just talking about Britain alone, there's over 101 companies listed on the London Stock Exchange market. This is, of course, from the London School of Economics. Most of them British. They have mining operations in 37 sub-Saharan African countries. They collectively control over $1 trillion worth of Africa's most valuable resources. And he goes on to say the UK government has used its power and influence to ensure the British mining companies have access to Africa's raw materials. So to me, that was very poignant. And I think that was a point well made and something that, you know, we all know. But sometimes when these figures are put right in front of us, it makes us realize how, although we claim to be free, but nothing hasn't changed. And I think, you know, Julius Malema is just radical, straight to you, letting you know this is what is happening, rather than going the diplomatic way, as I've said. But the reason for his presence in Kenya, talking about the Institute of Pan-Africanism in the university there, I was really happy about that, Julius, because we've had discussions where you're trying to find sources or resources to back your argument. And really, do you come across anything tangible written by an African from an African perspective? What we get to know is, you know, scholars from the West telling us about what took place in Africa. And we must not overlook and think that, oh, these guys are just scholars. They're not policymakers. But these guys do turn out to be policymakers. And if I may, you know, post-Second World War, and I've said this many times, post-Second World War, the scramble for Africa again, the ideological warfare, which is communism and democracy. It was drafted by scholars. The U.S. government funded scholars to come up with policies, ideas that would enable them to push forward their interests to avoid or to stop communism spreading across the continent of Africa. And it succeeded. So the fact that this institution is being built or been implemented in Kenya alone is something that will help us as Africans and also, you know, the future generation, because it's high time that things the pendulum shifted on our side to be able to tell our stories and, you know, with research based, and to be able to know that this is exactly what happened. And for us as, you know, journalists, scholars, people who love to read, to educate ourselves, academics, to be able to find these sources to push forward the African ideology, because to me it is an ideology. It is something that can happen. He made mention of the fact that you know, you talk about the economic issues across the continent. Some might sit somewhere and say that this is far-fetched and it can never be reached. The fact that, you know, removing every country's currency and having a single currency, having a single state, it can be achieved. He also went on to talk about the fact that, you know, to do is that you cannot get single train going to and fro South Africa to Kenya or to Ghana to Nigeria. And again, if we're talking about economic productivities, economic activities, these are the things that we have to strive for. So in as much as Julius Malema in his antics, and sometimes he might come across as too extreme, I mean, when you strip away all the antics, he has got a point. And I do agree with him on most things that he's saying. Now, coming to the president, President Ruto. I mean, you know, when you want to get into office, you can say whatever you want, what people want to hear. And then when you get into office, you realize that it's not actually as it seems. But we cannot sit down and make these excuses for the leaders. We can't keep on saying that, you know, their hands are tied behind their backs and nothing can be done. It's high time we take action. So, of course, you take certain actions, the repercussions will be severe. And we all have to tighten up our belts and deal with it. In the short term, it will be catastrophic for the short term. But in the long term, it is only the countries across the continent of Africa that will benefit.
Indeed. Jonas, one of the things that I noted, and also the extremely important with this, the launch of this new institution at Lukenya University, I've seen a lot of and I've listened to a lot of inspirational speakers across Africa continent, all talking about the power of unity, the power of people from Africa uniting. I've listened to them and I'm like, each one talks and I'm like, let's do it now. But then where is the infrastructure? You know what I mean? As much as PLO Lumumba can be, so Professor PLO Lumumba can be really radical focal in Kenya, Malema in South Africa, with no infrastructure to be operational with a continent in mind, it just remains futile exercise. I don't know how important do you think this should be, and probably do you think away from just the university and the institution, we need more?
No, I think we need one. I'll take on the first thing that you said in terms of infrastructure. But we also must also realize that prior to Professor Lumumba, there were other professors who wanted to champion this idea of Pan-Africanism. The technological advancement was not ready, and so all their work was only limited to people who were part of that organization. So, for instance, for the movement to reach people, was more or less had to meet, you know, especially the diaspora, you know, some secret meetings, and then try to gather the momentum. But here we are now. We can all be together in one place, real time, on social media. Now, when it comes to the connectivity, being able to, you know, spread the word and be there in person, it's a political willingness, I believe. And for society, because it would take society to be educated, to be able to hold politicians and our leaders accountable, it starts, for me, my opinion starts at university level. And this is where opinions, minds are shaped. And these are future generations that will seek to get into policymaking, get into position of powers to bring about change. So, yes, there are some restrictions in terms of infrastructure, but it's very, very crucial and it's really, really important. I'm surprised it's taken us this long, you know, for this institution to be implemented or to be cemented for them to start the ball rolling. And, you know, everything is education. Just as we're talking today, I'm sure you're aware, and I slightly digress, but we covered this numerous occasions about the UK's willingness to deport refugees, or so they call them illegal immigrants, people crossing the English Channel illegally, send them to Rwanda. But as we've been told, the Supreme Court has said that the UK's decision or the policy was illegal. Now, there's a serious debate going on. And how did this come about? Through, you know, universities, people having debates, coming up with policies that will informed us about what is wrong and what is right. And when it comes to these type of things, sometimes on the continent, this is where we lack. So for me, I'm really, really happy about this, the building of the Pan-Africanism Institution. And I'm looking to find out more about it. I'm even going as far as seeing how I can actually get involved, Julius, because I think it's really, really important. It's pivotal in society today.
Very important. I think also another thing which we have to pay attention to is, like, no matter what you do in life, when you don't have a home, your ideas, brilliant ideas, may end up being homeless.
Absolutely, I agree, and I think Julius Malema even touched upon it. He said that, you know, the brain drain. We have fantastic scholars, but they all end up absconding to the West. But if we can maintain them here, then, you know, you realize that people that are coming up with ideas, you realize that there's a lot of them. Many, many, many that have, you know, migrated from the continent into this country. So this institution is just the beginning, and hopefully they'll be able to spread it across the entire region, and then hopefully we can all connect. And with that, you know, society will only, I hate to say, as the Americans were saying it about, you know, modernization. The dream of modernization and us being modernized and be more educated and improving our lives comes from this and out of this more educated, and also to come up with good policies and also to hold our leaders accountable.
Indeed. We are going for a quick break. When we come back, we'll carry on with this great conversation. Don't go away. Stay tuned.
Colorful radio. Colorful radio.
Welcome back. This is Africa in Focus, and today we are with my great friend Jonas Howell, broadcaster and of course seasoned journalist, and we are talking about Pan-Africanism. Before we went for break, we heard Julius Malema and covered a huge ground, but right now we just want to find out what has been the challenge of achieving Pan-Africanism. And we are going to hear from Professor Pielo Lumumba, Kenyan. We just want to hear his take, and then we'll carry on from there.
And therefore, the post-independence African country or countries are bedeviled by many things. That could be a reason. It has also been said that part of the reason why we have not realized our potential is because we make the wrong choices. And that could very well be true. And my brother, who spoke about choices so very well, told us that it all rests on the choices that you make. And you who are Christians will remember that at critical moments, even in the Christian tradition, it has always been a question of choices. If you read the book of 1 Kings at chapter 18, when there is conflict in that little place called Israel, Elijah summons them and says, "Choose you now. If Baal is God, bring the 450 disciples of Baal and the 400 of Asherah who dine with Jezebel. And if God is God, let him be worshipped. If Baal is Baal, let him be worshipped." Perhaps that is the reason why we are where we are. We never make the right choices. We choose Baal when we should be choosing God. There are those who have said possibly, and you see this choice if you read the book of Joshua chapter 24, when he calls the Israelites and tells them, "Choose you now. Do you want to worship the gods whom your ancestors worshipped before they crossed the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell? As for me and my house, we shall serve the Lord." Perhaps we are not serving the gods, and that the gods are angry. And in the anger, they continue to visit pain upon us. So there is a sense in which all and many things have been talked about. But Africa sometimes judges ourselves very harshly, and with a jaundiced sense of history. The post-colonial African state, the oldest post-colonial African state, is Ghana, 66 years only. Nigeria, 63 years only. And we often forget these very important and immortal words of John Henry Clark when he said that all African countries, upon regaining independence, started to conduct the affairs on the basis of systems of governments that were borrowed from Europe, and that none of them will ever succeed on the basis of borrowed systems. And as if he were a Jewish prophet, he is being proven right on a daily basis. Because whenever we in the African countries think that we have identified the problem and that we have identified the antidote, when we apply the antidote, new wounds appear. That has been the state of Africa, and that continues to be our state. And therefore, when we judge Africa, we must ask ourselves, from whose lens are we judging Africa? When in 1965, the Osagie for Kwame Nkrumah wrote the book Neocolonialism, The Last Stage of Imperialism and the Most Dangerous, he was right, and he was overthrown for it. Because the colonizer left but never left. And if you have any doubt, see what is happening in Niger, in Guinea, in Burkina Faso, in Mali, they are alive and well. And Africa remains the only continent in the world that is still referred to as Francophone, Anglophone, Lusophone, and now we are beginning to even call it Russophone and Sinophone and Indophone. There is a sense in which we must never forget this, so that when we are judging Africa, we ought to judge her on the basis and upon the realization that the headwinds that stand on our path are numerous, and that there is no shortage of fifth columnists within our ranks. The SMO spoke, and if the SMO were to speak a little longer, he would have reminded you of what Chinua Achebe said in Things Fall Apart, that they came and put the things that held us together, and we can no longer reason as one. And he said, we may have sent the white man away, but what about our brothers whose minds they have infected and infested? And there is no shortage of them. So Africa can and will arise. And if you look at the continent of Africa, she has always been conscious of the need to do right things. And if you look at the continent since 1963, and I can remember this so very vividly, I can remember Kwame Nkrumah in 1957 on the 6th of March saying, the freedom of Ghana means nothing if the rest of Africa is not free. He says the same thing in 1958. He repeats the same thing in 1960 in Casablanca, Morocco. He repeats it again on 25th of May, 1963 in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, where he tells the 32 heads of states gathered there, we must leave here with one army. We must leave here with one currency. We must leave here with one foreign policy coordinated. And I even suggest that we can have a capital, and I suggest Bangui in Central African Republic because it is the most central. But we listen to him not. After that, of course, we have had our gains. Under the aegis of the OAU, Africa was able to eliminate apartheid, South Africa. Under the aegis of the OAU, Africa was able to chase away the Portuguese in Cabo Verde, in Angola, in Mozambique, in Guinea-Bissau. Under the aegis of the OAU, Africa was able to chase away the apartheid regime in what is now Namibia and the Ian Smith regime in what is now Zimbabwe. Let us not judge ourselves too harshly. We have made our mistakes, but sometimes it is proper, as my sister say, that we see half full glass rather than half empty. We must not debilitate ourselves by constantly bashing ourselves and looking at Africa from jaundiced eyes from Europe and America.
Oh, the great professor there.
Yes.
He's on fire again, and he's a great friend of Julius Malema, by the way.
You can see the contrast, can't you? Between the two.
Yeah.
Both of them are the similar, same ideology, but different in the delivering of the ideology. And I think this is why they, you know, you can see the both of them together, because let's not be blind to the fact that there are people on the side of Malema and also people on the side of the professor. And it's interesting what he talked about. I mean, we cannot talk about Africa without looking at post-colonial Africa, and this is the beginning of, you know, the freedom breaking the chains and the shackles. And he always references the likes of Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, and I believe that speech was actually in Accra in Ghana, and hence the you know, the reference. And and you know, this whole thing, the ideology of neo-colonialism or neo-colonization, as described as one writer, and I think his name was Asif, I can't quite remember the surname, and he just puts it as deliberate and continued survival of colonial system in independent African states, And he goes on to say this happens by turning these states into victims of political, mental, economic, social, military, and technical forms of domination carried out through indirect and subtle means that did not include direct violence. So, in as much as we would think, you know, colonization was heavy-handed and, you know, the brutality and so on and so forth and the violence that took place, neocolonialism does not give that impression. But some might even argue to be even more deadlier than the colonization itself when we talk about economically, or we talk about in a world in the 21st century where we're claimed to be more educated and we have our freedom as opposed to the times where we're under the direct rule of the colonial master. And if you read Nkrumah's book, which I had the privilege of reading, and it comes as no surprise after, I think it was less than a year after the publication of the book, which he passionately despised and also described as, you know, a book that, gosh, what's the name of the book? The Last Stage of Imperialism, right? Neocolonialism, The Last Stage of Imperialism, which actually outlined in detail everything that, you know, neocolonization was all about. And apparently it caused a political earthquake across Western nations, particularly the US. And no surprise, in less than a year after the publication of that book, he was overthrown, which was aided by the United States of America. So I sympathize and I empathize with what the professor was saying there, that it would be unjustified to criticize or to look at Africa through what lens? Through the colonial lens or through us as Africans and what we know and what we see? Many times we think that when our leaders sign these trade deals and negotiations and so on and so forth, you know, we hardly do we get the fine details of what is going on. And some of our leaders come into power with the goodwill, wanting to do good for their fellow citizens. But unfortunately, the powers that be and the mechanisms that have been put in place to stifle the continent has been difficult for such people to break through. And the more we talk about this, the more we discuss this, the more we're open and the more we're able to question and look at the details in agreements that are being signed, the more evident it becomes. And the more voices and more pressure we're able to put on our leaders, the more we can impact and try and make change, to try and change things, because it is happening.
This is Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At Dermashack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, Dermadew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, Dermadew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
You know, but just before we went on the break, I did make mention of the amount of British companies, 101 companies in 37 countries, sub-Saharan African countries, worth $1 trillion extracting natural resources. And if we were supposed to go into more details to see the percentage, how much each country actually receives or gains from the activities of these British companies in the countries, it would be staggering. And this is where the problem is. You can gain political freedom, in quotes, but without economic freedom, then you're more or less powerless, because unfortunately everything is money. Money makes the world go round.
And Jonas, I think that's why you find out also owning your own currency as Africa is crucial and very important. I'm talking about the case of France as a country.
Yes.
Date of former French colonies paying for colonization. And you're talking about, 4.5 billion US dollars in a year's time collectively, if they had to pay these, all of them collectively, former French colonies. And then the saddest thing is that although they are supposed to pay that amount, each country's GDP is definitely less than 100 US dollar billions. And when you just combine the maths, like, you want to say, ask yourself many questions. For starters, you should be, as former colonizing power, France should be paying reparations to the former colonies. Mm-hmm. Why are the former colonies paying France? For what? And why are former colonies still using French currency? Because it's about economics. It's about control. So that's why also, Jonas, maybe if we even go deeper, you realize what Professor was saying. Your brother is there in it. And when he's talking about that, it's like, anytime talk about election in an African country, all these countries are like, who is likely to be our best ally? Who is soft? Who can we use? So it matters so much who wins any election in an African country to the Western world, because they have their interests, Western interests on the ground. Yeah, they support those they think they can work with, you know, but not those who are radicals and coming to fight and speaking end of imperialism.
I mean, I agree with you, Julius. And then if you go by what Nkrumah was saying, you know, and this is why I love Nkrumah's foresight, because he could actually, you know, he studied the system, knew and understood the system. He was a politician, not a lawyer or a banker in the financial sector. He was a politician. He understood politics and he understood the African problems and what needed for Africans to gain their independence, right? And one thing, just before I come on to this neocolonialism, when Nkrumah came to Ghana, if you look at the bond that the British signed when they conquered, when they took over Ghana, the agreement was they would rule for 100 years. And that 100 years, I think it was 1847, that 100 years was 1947. So by the agreement, the British should have evacuated Ghana in 1947. But the political class at that time wanted them to extend their stay. Nkrumah was vehemently against it. So that's why Ghana, in the end, gained its independence in 1957. He understood. He was a politician. He understood how to campaign. He was even in prison when he became the first prime minister. Moreover, the British still wanted to control Ghana, because at that time, Ghana was using the British system of prime minister, which means he still swore allegiance to the Queen, who was the head of state. He said, no, we'll opt for the presidential system, to totally remove or try to disassociate Ghana away from the British Empire. Now, back to his book. And if anything he said in his book, they didn't see it, or we couldn't see it at that time. Well, we're living it now. We're the ones that are actually seeing what is happening. And I just want to just say a few things here. Nkrumah said that the result of neocolonialism is that foreign capital is used to the exploitation rather than for development of less developed countries. It puts countries, makes them more dependent on the so-called superpowers. A classical case of what I've just said. And, you know, you have to look at how the system has been designed. So we talk about the Washington Consensus. We're talking about the IMF. You're talking about World Bank and so on and so forth. These organizations, the UN, these institutions, right? position to make it look as if they help it, but rather leaves you poorer than you were before. So I just give one example. So under the, you know, and I'm sure our listeners are used to this, the UN development goals, right? They have schemes under this particular initiatives. And in one case, this initiative were looking to help to reduce or eliminate the poverty in Ghana. So through agriculture. And what happens? What that means is the poor, you know, the less fortunate people in poverty in Ghana have to give up their lands for this initiative to take place. So what happens is the young people, the poor people, lose their land, not knowing this is being funded by the US and the UK. Businessmen and women are the ones that actually bringing these seeds, taking the land of the poor people, and actually is their business, is their business model. And who reaps the benefit? They do. And so these are the schemes. So in as much as people, countries who sign deals, in the end, okay, you're getting 1 million. You're giving up X amount of land, hundreds and thousands of acres of lands for businesses to come in there, and for people to come into your country to start their businesses. And the end is the locals who ends losing. So this is just another form of neocolonialism. You think they're helping you, but really and truly, they're not. And this is the predicament we find ourselves in collectively as Africans. So Pan-Africanism is not dead. And this has been one of the debates that is still ongoing. Many people think it's an illusion. Our friend, and I'll put his name out there, because he's also written a book, Kofi Ali, has actually made a video claiming that Pan-Africanism is an illusion, which I totally disagree.
It's an illusion.
I totally disagree. Because and I would just say one thing on this, Julius. Yeah. That one thing that, for me, to me, gives me hope to know that subconsciously that it is very much alive is that there's never been a time in history where we've seen many Africans traveling across other, traveling into other African countries. Never. Now you have people actually moving from one place to the other. Ghanaians traveling to Nigeria, Nigerians traveling to Ghana, setting up businesses. Ghanaians going to Kenya, Kenya's going to Ghana. So the dream is very much alive, much subconsciously. Alive. Yes, it's very, very much alive.
You cannot lose hope, you see. I think my take on that, if you do a video calling Pan-Africanism an illusion, I see a man who is really afraid of the dark. But when it's very dark, he closes his eyes to avoid the darkness.
Another debate is the fact that many have said, right, that Africa was never united in the first place. So what makes us believe or even suggest that the United States of Africa can work? And I've always argued on this, in that the colonial masters came in and realized and saw the division and capitalized on the division. But the post-colonial eras, the generation that came, who lived during the colonial imposition, realized that it's only by the unification of Africa that we'll be able to oppose or to do away with these colonial measures that have been put in place. And it is achievable. It is achievable. Yeah. Absolutely. It is achievable.
It's definitely achievable. And I think we keep the fire burning. I'm happy there are institutions. And we had the professor talk about the successes, even under Organization of Africa Unity.
Yes.
It's just a question of people being positive and focused and seeing what unity can, you know, do for you as a collectivity. So I think there's a lot of hope. And yeah, to our listeners, you know, I would love to carry on these conversations, but before we turn you all into Pan-Africanists, let us give you a break so that you think about it.
Africa in focus. get it right back. She put it all on me. I couldn't fight that. She love when I put on it when it's tied back. You know it's hard to get up out of that. I get sidetracked. Shake something. Let ride. Control it. You know who to call if you're horny. Ride on it. Green light. In the street, be my little secret, baby. Be my little friend. All weekend, on a weekend, do something different. Got my attention. Eight figures, can with a wrist. Big picture, more than just a night with ya. Don't switch up, girl, when the lights hit ya. Then diamonds gon' dance. Summer too hot, about to fuck it up. Is the mood right? Is it right?
Na 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 na